Welcome to Parent Talk, discussing topics from infants to teens and every age in between. Call in with your questions at any time, 783-WEC, 783-9325. Now, here's the host of Parent Talk, Linda O'Connor.
Hey, good morning. It is cold out there. 6 degrees feels like feels like minus 8 degrees. It is really cold. So bundle up if you're going out. Hey, today we're talking about co-sleeping. Is it right for your family? And later this morning, we're going to have a real treat. Gary Carton, he's author of Last Ackaway, the first book in the Spirit Animal Trilogy for Preteens, is going to join me to talk about his wonderful book that has won the bronze medal in the 2013 Moonbeam Children's Book Award for Preteen Fiction Fantasy. Gotta love that. Hey, I have on the line Gary Carton. He's author of The Last Ackaway. This is the first book in the Spirit Animal Trilogy for Preteens, and I'm so excited to talk to him about this book, because the more I read about the book, the more I want to read. So, Gary, thanks for joining me this morning. First, I want to know a little bit about the book. I haven't had a chance to read the book itself. So tell me, without giving away too much of the plot, because we don't want to be a spoiler here, tell me a little bit about The Last Ackaway.
What The Ackaway does is it connects kids to their spirit animals. And once kids are connected to their spirit animals, they have all these special powers. The bad guy in the book is trying to stop this connection. So Jake and Brody Boondoggle have to team up to kind of stop Uncle Skeeta, protect The Last Ackaway, and kind of protect the special powers for kids everywhere.
Now, is there actually an Ackaway out there anywhere in this world?
Something is debatable. I think I kind of believe that there are.
There you go.
Nothing that's named an Ackaway, but I do believe, I've always said that I believe every kid has special powers. I always say when I talk to kids, it doesn't mean don't try jumping off a roof. It doesn't mean you can fly or climb up walls. When I was a kid, I used to try to get spiders to bite me so that I could get, Spider-Man's powers. And I don't recommend that either. I ended up in a bath full of oatmeal, to get all this itching off. But I do believe the kids have, whether it's being able to just make somebody smile or a love of dinosaurs or being able to run a little bit faster, just have some interest. I just believe every kid has these great, extraordinary powers that make them unique. So in that way, I definitely do think it's real.
I love that. And what inspired you to write the book?
It actually started with a birthday party for my younger son, Brody. And this was a party where, we tried to think of all these fun birthday parties for him. And this one, he had just gotten a deck of spirit animal cards from his grandmother. And so right before the party, we're like, wouldn't it be cool if we kind of gave the kids all these challenges? And then if they made all these challenges, they were connected to their spirit animal. And then the last part of the party was, they would make a spirit animal necklace, and that would kind of be their go-away. And right before the party, I went up and wrote a poem about it to kind of set the whole thing up. And the kids loved it. It was a total hit, which is more than I can say for some of my other birthday parties.
We've all been there, believe me.
Yeah, I went to a birthday party where it was a superhero party. And so we needed a bad guy, right, if there's a superhero. And I created the evil black tooth, and I had a tape recorder that went, ha, 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 the evil black tooth has stolen all your powers. And the kids were like, freaking out and scared for like the next week. I was getting like bad calls from parents. But anyways, they loved this one and it was really fun. And afterwards, everyone was like, you should turn this into a story. So that's kind of what I did.
And your two sons are the main characters in the book. Their names are in the book, correct?
Their names, exactly. Because I would always say, when I had to read it, they're like, I wouldn't do that. I'm like, these characters are based on you. They're not exactly like you. But there are certainly some similarities, yeah. So I'm very lucky that I have an amazing, I live in a great neighborhood with tons of kids that always would run around and play street hockey and do all these cool things. So there's lots of inspiration to take for this book. And it's really all about, just having kids be outside, have fun, go on great adventures, explore, use their imagination and creativity. So it's pretty cool because I have a great group of kids that allows me to see that every day.
And let's talk about that, because as I was researching this book, it sounded like your research included these children, where you would read them parts of your book and get their reaction to see what they thought. Is that correct? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I always I started writing it, and actually the book started because I would read to my kids every night. And, I was just a big believer in reading to them. They would always say one more chapter, and I would say no problem. And stay up really late. Of course, you know what it's like when kids don't get enough sleep the next day. They were a little bit torturous, but I would do the same thing again the next night just because I just wanted them to have this love of reading. And after a while, they kind of say stuff like, I think I know how the ending's going to be. And they're like, Dad, you should write a book that has an unpredictable ending.
Ah.
So as I was writing, I would try to just make sure that I was on the right track. And like I said, I had this great group of kids. And sometimes they'd be like, oh, you're ruining the book. Or sometimes they'd be like, yeah, this is funny or this is good. So it was a great little resource to have. I knew I was onto something when my older son, Jake, who is very honest, and he'll tell you. If you're doing something good, he'll tell you. If you're doing something bad, I'm like, Dad, you're embarrassing the family or something. And, you know, he'll be honest. And he read a first draft. And he's not a huge reader. Brody, my younger son, is just a voracious, insane reader. And Brody, Jake will read, but he likes to do other things as well. And he read the first draft, and he said, I hoped I would like it, but I did not think I would like it this much. And
oh,
so
my
then
God.
I kind of knew that I was onto something good here.
What a compliment. And let's step back a second, because you mentioned that you wanted your kids to have a love of reading. But that's not something, from what I understand, you had when you were growing up. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. When I was, I always start out when I talk to kids, by, you know, when I talk at book fairs or something like that, and I say it's strange that I would be here to talk at book fair, because when I was a kid, you know, I never liked reading at all. And, you know, I grew up with a learning disability that made it very difficult for me to read. I remember when I was in the third grade, I got pulled out for, you know, for this by a teacher that would help me, and she kind of pulled me out, and she said the first time, she said, do you know what a learning disability is? And I said, no, I don't. And she said, it's a gift. And she said, you learn and you see things differently than most people, but different is good. And after every Wednesday that I would go with her, she'd always say, different is good. And I tell the kids when I tell the story that did not make me feel better when I was a kid. I appreciate it now that I'm an adult, but still, growing up and, you know, going through that, it was very, very difficult to read. And I know we talked about this before. It means you have to kind of come up with other strategies. So one of the things that I would do was, instead of researching papers and going to the library and trying to, back in the days, you know, you had microfiche and stuff. You just didn't go on the internet. I would find experts on that topic, and I would just interview them. And I would just go through the phone book, and I would interview them, and I would get all this information. And my teachers, they loved it. They're like, this is great original research. And I was like, oh, yeah, original research. That's what I'm doing. When really I was just trying to come up with, you know, other ways to avoid reading, because it was really difficult for me. you know, I turned into a reporter, so it kind of worked out, you know, to help me. And my first job was a reporter for the Washington Post. So it's amazing, and that's kind of when I realized what my teacher was talking about, that you don't always have to go down the same path. You know, you grew up and everyone tells you, you know, reading is the most important thing to being smart and being successful. And if you're a great reader, that's awesome. And I always wanted to be a great reader. I was so jealous of these kids that would just love to read and want to read more and more. And my sister and my mom and my brother were all like that, you know, and my aunt. And, you know, I wanted to be like that. But there's lots – what I've realized is there's lots of different ways to get to something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's really what this book is about, too, is just you don't always have to follow the same path, and being different can be good. And, you know, as long as you're inspired and believe, then you can really accomplish anything.
I love that.
Whatever you can imagine, I should say.
Absolutely love that. Hey, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Gary Carton. He's author of The Last Akaway. How do you say that? Akaway?
It's Akaway.
Akaway.
Yeah, which is totally spelled wrong. One of my best. See, I should probably learn to read better, because I spelled it that way, but everyone pronounces it differently. So it's The Last Akaway.
The Last Akaway. It's the first book in the Spirit Animal Trilogy for preteens. Now, this is your first book ever, correct?
Actually, no. I actually wrote a nonfiction book called No Free Lunch. I had a great opportunity to work at the Welfare to Work Partnership. And I wrote a story about a man named Rodney Carroll, and it was about how he grew up in Philadelphia on welfare and became a leader in just that issue and helping tons and tons of people go from welfare to work. President Clinton wrote the foreword for it, and so that was a nonfiction book, and it was a great experience, and I loved it. And it's kind of interesting now to be able to. Rodney and I would work together on the book, and we'd have all these great ideas. And in those days, I was like, I just tell the story. It's such a beautiful story that he has. Just tell the story. So it's kind of cool now that I can kind of just see something and make it up. Wherever my imagination takes me, I can kind of go in that direction for fiction. So they're both fun, but it's a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're working on the second book. Do you have another book in the works?
I do, yes. I am cranking away on it. And I always feel bad when I get great emails from kids saying, when's the second book going to be out? So I am cranking away on it. I have the first about 30 pages done, so that's definitely my first priority right now, to finish that up.
That's a lot of pressure if they're waiting for the book. It's like they're standing next to you.
I feel terrible about it, too, because I get to see, you know, I go to schools, and the kids have been amazing. I've been really fortunate. It's a great gift to just visit kids and have them read the book and get emails from parents and teachers and things like that. And then I never like to lie to kids. That's the key. So when they're like, when's the book coming? I don't want to lie to them and say it's going to be a certain time and then not have it be. That's what was one of my least favorite things as a kid, when people would say, I'm going to do this, and then they wouldn't do it.
Right.
So I'm always telling the truth with it. I cannot be honest. I promise I'm going to crank away as fast as I can, but, you know, don't get your hopes up for any time soon. But I am going to shoot. I should say I am going to shoot for this summer is what I've been telling them now.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Now, you have ties to Western New York. You want to just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, yeah. Buffalo is one of my favorite places on the planet, actually. My mom's family, my mom grew up in Buffalo, and, you know, I spent my childhood going there a couple times every year. I still have cousins who live there. My aunt, Judy Summer, was a teacher there for 40 years. One of my, she was the best. She was always trying to get me to read and to take me to museums. And so she was, you know, again, something I never appreciated at the time, but now I really appreciate. And then, my wife, who I consider to be the coolest person on the planet, is from Buffalo as well, and she grew up in the city and went to see the honors, and her mom and brother and dad are still around there, so we go back all the time and visit, and her mom lives in Woodlawn, so it's right on Lake Erie, and a big part of this book is based on that experience, because every time it would snow, Alyssa's mom, Susan, would take the kids out, like on the fresh, you know, snow, and they could look for animal tracks.
Mm.
And I always thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, right.
You know, no matter what, I know you mentioned it was freezing there today, but no matter what, even if it was cold, or, you know, they just kind of bundle up and go on and out and go on these great adventures. So, yeah, I love Buffalo. It's definitely one of my favorite places.
Well, and I am so grateful that you joined us this morning, and I found out about your book. And let's just tell people how they can get a hold of it, and if you have a website where they can learn more about you.
Yeah, definitely, and thanks so much again for the opportunity. I love your show, so really appreciate it.
Thank you.
But, yeah, there's lots of places they can get it. I guess the best place to start maybe is on our website, which is brodyboondoggle.com. It's B-R-O-D-Y and then boondoggle.com. And you can get the book there. And there's also this great quiz for kids where they can go and kind of learn their spirit animal. And then, you know, they can get the necklace and things like that. So it's kind of a cool thing. But you can also get it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and go to your local bookstores or Barnes & Noble. And if they don't have it, if they're sold out, then they'll know how to get more copies. So
wonderful.
Lots of different places. And, yeah, it should be a cool read. It's really perfect for kids ages 7 to 13, kind of in that range.
Yep.
I've had parents say they read it to 5- and 6-year-olds, and I've had grandmothers who are 15, 16, 70 say they loved it too. So.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Well, Gary, it was a pleasure talking to you. Get cranking on that second book and make sure – make sure to reach out to us when it's done, okay?
Well, I really appreciate your time, and I will definitely do that. So thank you so much.
Wonderful. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere, because guess what? We've got Frank Miller coming up with lots of great events going on around town, and you can have a chance to put your name in the hat to win some tickets, a 4-pack, to Sesame Street Live coming up at Shays in March. You're listening to Parent Talk on FM 102.9 and AM 1230, Timeless WECK.